Rhys had asked Cassian to look into the human queens. The subterfuge would fall to Az. Az's hazel eyes glimmered. He squeezed Cassian's shoulder, his hand a warm weight against the chill. Good luck to you, too. Cassian didn't know why he'd thought Nesta would enter the sparring ring with him today. She sat her ass right on the same rock as the day before and did not move. By the time Moore had appeared to winnow them to the camp, he'd managed to get enough control over himself that he'd stopped thinking about what Nesta's hands would feel like and started considering what they'd cover today. He'd planned to keep the lesson to an hour, then leave her at Rhys's mother's old house while he did a standard check of the Illyrian warband's state of rebuilding their ranks. He wouldn't mention that they might be flying into battle soon, depending on what Az learned. He didn't tell Nesta any of this information either, especially about Eris. She'd made her contempt of the Fey realms perfectly clear, and he'd be damned if he'd give her one more verbal weapon to wield against him, since she'd likely see right through him and realize he knew all of this political scheming and planning was far beyond his abilities. He also didn't let himself consider whether it was wise to leave her alone here, even for an hour.
So we're back to this?
Cassian asked, ignoring how every single asshole in the camp watched him. Them. Her. Nesta picked at her nails. Wisps of her braided hair drifted free in the wind. She'd hunched over her knees, keeping her body as compact as possible. He said,
"You'd stop being so cold if you got up and moved."
She only folded one ankle over another.
"If you want to sit on that rock and freeze for the next 2 hours, go ahead."
"Fine."
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 "Good one, Ness."
He threw her a mocking grin that he knew made her see red and strode to the center of the practice area. He halted in its heart, allowing his breathing to take over. When she didn't reply, he let himself fall into that calm, steady pace within his mind. Let his body begin the series of motions he'd performed for 5 centuries straight. The initial steps were to remind his body that it was about to start working, stretching and breathing, concentrating on everything from his toes to the tips of his wings, waking everything up. It got harder from there. Cassian yielded to instinct and movement and breath, only dimly aware of the female watching from that rock. "Keep reaching out your hand." Cassian was breathless by the time he finished an hour later. Nesta, to his satisfaction, had become rigid with cold. But she hadn't moved, hadn't even shifted during his exercises. Wiping the sweat from his brow, he noted that her lips had taken on a blue tinge. Unacceptable. He indicated Rhys's mother's house.
"Go wait in there. I have business to attend to."
She didn't move. Cassian rolled his eyes.
"Either you sit out here for the next hour, or you can go inside and warm up."
She wasn't that stubborn, was she? Thankfully, a blast of icy wind hit the camp at that exact moment, and Nesta began moving toward the house. Its interior was indeed warm, with a fire crackling in the sooty hearth that occupied much of the main room. Feyre or Rhys must have woken the house for them. He held the door for Nesta as she walked in, already rubbing her hands. Slowly, Nesta surveyed the space, the kitchen table before the windows, the little sitting area that occupied the other half of the room, the narrow staircase that led to the exposed upstairs hallway, and the 2 bedrooms beyond. One of those rooms had been his since childhood, the first bedroom, the first night indoors he'd ever experienced. This house was the first true home he'd ever had. He knew every scratch and splinter, every dent and burn mark, all of it preserved with magic. There, that gouged out spot by the base of the railing, that was where he'd cracked his head when Rhys had tackled him during one of their countless brawls. There,
That stain on the old red couch? That was when he'd spilled his ale while the three of them were drunk out of their minds on their first solo night in this house, at age 16. Reese's mother had been off in Valaris for a rare visit to her mate, and Cassian had been too stupid drunk to know how to clean it. Even Reese, swaying with the combination of ale and liquor, had failed to lift the stain, his magic accidentally setting it instead of wiping it away. They'd rearranged the throw pillows to hide it from his mother when she returned the next morning, but she'd spied it immediately. Perhaps it had something to do with the fact that they'd still been drunk, given away by Az's relentless hiccuping. Cassian nodded to the kitchen table. Since you're so good at sitting, why don't you make yourself comfortable? When she didn't answer, he turned to find Nesta standing in front of the hearth, arms tightly crossed, the flickering light dancing in her beautiful hair. She didn't look up at him. She'd always stood with that stillness, even as a human. It had only amplified when she'd become High Fae. Nesta stared at the fire as if it murmured to that burning soul of hers.
What are you looking at?
He asked. She blinked, seeming to realize he was still there. A log on the fire popped, and she flinched. Not in surprise, he noted, but in dread, fear. He glanced between her and the fire. Where had she gone for those few moments? What horror had she been reliving? Her face had blanched, and shadows dimmed her blue-gray eyes. He knew that expression, had seen it and felt it so many times he'd lost track.
There are some shops in the village, he offered, suddenly desperate for anything to remove that hollowness from her. If you don't feel like sitting in here, you could visit them.
Nesta still said nothing, so he let it drop and left the house in silence. Chapter 9. Nesta stepped into the warmth of the small shop. The bell above the door jangled as she entered. The floors were fresh pine, all polished and gleaming, a matching counter occupying the back. An open door beyond it revealing a rear room. Clothes for both males and females occupied the space. Some displayed on dummies, others folded neatly along display tables. A dark-haired female appeared on the other side of the counter, her braided back hair shining in the lights. Her face was striking, elegant and sharp, contrasting with her full mouth. Her angular eyes and light brown skin suggested a heritage from another region, perhaps a recent ancestor from the Dawn Court. The light in those eyes was direct, clear. Good morning, the female said, her voice solid and frank. Can I help you? If she recognized Nesta, she didn't let on. Nesta gestured down at her fighting leathers. I was looking for something warmer than this. The cold leaks through. Ah, the female said, glancing toward the door and the empty street beyond, worried that someone might see her in here, or waiting for another customer. The warriors are all such proud fools that they never complain about the leathers being cold. They claim they keep them perfectly warm.
They're decently warm, Nesta confessed. Part of her smiling at the way the female had said, proud fools, as if she shared Nesta's instinct to be unimpressed by the males in the camp. But the cold still hits me. The woman folded back the partition on the counter, entering the showroom proper. She surveyed Nesta from head to toe. I don't sell fighting gear, but I wonder if we could get fleece-lined leathers made. She nodded toward the street.
How often do you train?
I'm not training. I'm...
Nesta struggled for the right words.
Honestly, what she was doing was being a wretched asshole. I'm watching, she said a shade pathetically.
Ah, the female's eyes glinted. Brought here against your will.
It was none of her business, but Nesta said, part of my duties to the night court. She wanted to see if the female would pry, to see if she really did not know her, if she would judge her for being a miserable waste of life. The female angled her head, her braids slipping over the shoulder of her simple homespun gown. Her wings twitched, the motion drawing Nesta's eye. Scars ran down them, unusual for the Fae. Azrael and Lucian were two of the few who bore scars, both from traumas so terrible Nesta had never dared ask for details. For this female to bear them as well. My wings were clipped, the female said. My father was a traditional male. He believed females should serve their families and be confined to their homes. I disagreed. He won, in the end. Sharp, short words. Rhys's mother, Feyre had once told her, had nearly been doomed to such a fate. Only the arrival of his father had stopped the clipping from occurring. She'd been revealed as his mate and endured the miserable union, mostly from gratitude for her unharmed wings. No one, it seemed, had been there to save this female. I'm sorry. Nesta shifted on her feet. The female waved a slim hand. It's of no consequence now. This shop keeps me busy enough that some days I forget I could ever fly in the first place. No healer can repair them? Her face tightened, and Nesta regretted her question. It is extremely complex. All the connecting muscles and nerves and senses. Short of the High Lord of Dawn, I'm not sure anyone could handle it. Theson, Nesta recalled, was a master of healing. Feyre bore his power in her veins, had offered to use it to heal Elaine from her stupor after being turned High Fae. Nesta blocked out the memory of that pale face, the empty brown eyes. Anyway, the female said quickly, I can make inquiries to my suppliers about whether the leathers could be made warmer. It might take a few weeks, possibly a month, but I'll send word as soon as I hear. That's fine, thank you. A thought clanged through Nesta. How much will it cost? She had no money. You work for the High Lord, do you not? The female angled her head again. I can send the bill to Valaris. Nesta didn't want to admit how low she'd fallen, not to this stranger. I actually don't need the warmer clothes. I thought Rhysand paid you all well. He does, but I am... Fine. If the female could be blunt, so could she. I'm cut off. Curiosity flooded the female's eyes. Why? Nesta stiffened. I don't know you well enough to tell you that. The female shrugged. All right. I can still make inquiries, get a price for you. If you're cold out there, you shouldn't suffer. She added pointedly, no matter what the High Lord may think. I think he'd rather Cassian threw me off the edge of that cliff over there. The female snorted, but she held out a hand toward Nesta. I'm Emery. Nesta took her hand, surprised to find her grip like iron. Nesta Archeron. I know, Emery said, releasing Nesta's hand. You killed the King of Hybern. Yes. There was no denying that fact, and she couldn't bring herself to lie that she wasn't the least bit smug about it. Good. Emery's smile was a thing of dangerous beauty. She said again, good. There was steel in this female, not just in her straight spine and chin, but in her eyes. Nesta turned toward the door and waiting cold, unsure what to do with the naked approval of what so many others had regarded either with awe or fear or doubt. Thank you for your help. So strange to speak polite, normal words. Strange to wish to offer them, and to a stranger, no less. Males and females, children darting amongst them, gawked at Nesta as she exited onto the street. A few hurried their children along. She met their stares with cool indifference. "You're right to hide your children from me," she wanted to say. "I am the monster you fear." "Same task as yesterday?" Nesta asked Clotho by way of greeting, still half-chilled from the camp she'd departed only 10 minutes earlier. Cassian had barely spoken upon returning to Rhysand's mother's house, his face taut with whatever he'd dealt with at the other Illyrian villages, and Morrigan had been just as sour-faced when she'd appeared to winnow them back to the House of Wind. Cassian had dumped Nesta on the landing veranda without so much as a farewell before he pivoted to where Moore dusted herself off. Within seconds, he was carrying the blonde beauty into the brisk wind. It shouldn't have bothered her, seeing him flying away with another female in his arms. Some small part of her knew it wasn't remotely fair to feel that body-tightening irritation at the sight. She had pushed him away again and again, and he had no reason to believe she'd wish it differently. And she knew he had a history with Morrigan, that they'd been lovers long ago. She'd turned from the sight, entering the house through its dining room, where she found a bowl of some sort of pork and bean soup waiting. A silent, thoughtful offering. She'd just said to the house, "I'm not hungry," before striding down to the library. Now she waited as Clotho wrote out an answer and handed over a piece of paper. Nesta read, "There are books to be shelved on level 5. Nesta peered over the railing beside Clotho's desk, silently counting. 5 was very far down, not within the first ring of true darkness, but hovering in the dimness above it. Nothing lives down there anymore, right? Bryaxis hasn't come back." Clotho's enchanted pen moved. The second note read, "Bryaxis never harmed any of us." "Why?" The pen scratched along the paper. "I think Bryaxis took pity on us. We saw our nightmares come true before we came here." It was an effort not to look at Clotho's gnarled hands or try to pierce the shadows beneath her hood. The priestess added to the note, "I can reassign you to a higher level."
"No,"
Nesta said hoarsely. "I'll manage." And that was that. An hour later, her leathers covered in dust, Nesta slumped at an empty wooden table in need of a pause. That same bowl of pork and bean soup appeared on the table. She peered at the distant ceiling.
"I said, I'm not hungry."
A spoon appeared alongside the bowl, and a napkin.
"This is absolutely none of your business."
A glass of water thudded down next to the soup. Nesta crossed her arms, leaning back in the chair.
"Who are you talking to?"
The light female voice had Nesta twisting around, stiffening as she found a priestess in the robes of an acolyte standing between the two nearest shelves. Her hood was thrown back, and phalight danced in the rich coppery chestnut of her pin-straight hair. Her large teal eyes were as clear and depthless as the stone usually atop a priestess's hood, and a scattering of freckles lay across her nose and cheeks, as if someone had tossed them with a careless hand. She was young, almost cultish, with her slender, elegant limbs. High fae, and yet Nesta couldn't explain the way she sensed that there was something else mixed into her, some secret beneath the pretty face. Nesta gestured to the soup and water, but they were gone. She scowled at the ceiling, at the house that had the nerve to pester her and then make her look like a lunatic. But she said to the priestess,
"I wasn't talking to anyone."
The priestess hefted the 5 tomes in her arms.
"Are you finished for today?"
Nesta glanced at the cart of books she'd left unsorted.
"No, I was taking a break."
You've only been working for an hour.
I didn't realize anyone was timing me.
Nesta allowed every bit of unpleasantness to show in her face. She'd already conversed with one stranger today, fulfilling her quota of basic decency. Being kind to a second one was beyond her. The acolyte remained unimpressed.
It's not every day we have someone new in our library.
She dumped the books onto Nesta's cart.
These can be shelved.
I don't answer to acolytes. The priestess drew up to her full height, which was slightly taller than average for fey females. A crackling sort of energy buzzed around her, and Nesta's power grumbled in answer.
You're here to work,
the acolyte said, her voice unruffled. And not only for Clotho.
You speak rather informally of your high priestess.
Clotho does not enforce rank. She encourages us to use her name.
And what is your name?
She would certainly be complaining to Clotho about this impertinent acolyte's attitude. The priestess's eyes glittered with amusement, as if aware of Nesta's plan.
Gwyneth Berdara.
Unusual for these fae to use family names. Even Rhys didn't use one as far as Nesta knew.
But you must call me Gwyn.
A level above, two priestesses walked by the railing in silence, hooded heads bowed and books in their arms. Nesta could have sworn one of them watched, though. Gwyn tracked the focus of her attention.
That's Rosalind and Deirdre.
How can you tell?
With their hoods on, they appeared nearly identical, save for their hands.
Their scents,
Gwyn said simply, and turned to the books she'd left on the cart.
Do you plan to shelve these, or do I need to take them elsewhere?
Nesta leveled a flat look at her. Living down here, there was a good chance the priestesses didn't know who she was, what she'd done, what power she bore.
I'll do it, Nesta said through clenched teeth.
Gwyn hooked her hair behind her arched ears. Freckles dotted her hands, too, like splattered bits of rust. If marks of trauma lingered, any evidence was hidden by her robe. But Nesta knew well how invisible wounds could be, how they could scar as deeply and badly as any physical breaking. And it was for that reminder alone that Nesta said more gently,
I'll do it right now.
Perhaps she had a little bit of her decency quota left. Gwyn marked the change.
I don't need your pity.
The words were sharp, as clear as her teal eyes.
It wasn't pity.
I've been here for nearly 2 years, but I haven't become so disconnected from others that I can't tell when someone remembers why I am here and alters their behavior.
Gwyn's mouth flattened to a line.
I don't need to be coddled, only spoken to like a person.
I doubt you'll enjoy the way I speak to most people, Nesta said.
Gwyn snorted.
Try me.
Nesta looked at her from under lowered brows again.
Get out of my sight.
Gwyn grinned. A broad, bright thing that showed most of her teeth and made her eyes sparkle in a way Nesta knew her own never had.
Oh, you're good.
Gwyn turned back to the stacks.
Really good.
She vanished into the gloom. Nesta stared after her for a long moment, wondering if she'd imagined the whole thing. Two friendly conversations in one day. She had no idea when such a thing had last occurred. Another hooded priestess drifted by and offered Nesta a bob of the chin in greeting. Quiet settled around her, as if Gwyn had been a summer storm that blew in and evaporated within a moment. Sighing, Nesta gathered the books Gwyn had left on the cart. Hours later, dusty and exhausted and finally hungry, Nesta stood before Clotho's desk and said,
Same story tomorrow?
Clotho wrote, Are you not pleased by your work?
I would be if your acolytes didn't boss me around like a servant.
Gwyneth mentioned she had run into you earlier.
She works for Merrill, my right hand, who is a fiercely demanding scholar. If Gwyneth's requests were abrupt, it was due to the pressing nature of the work she does.
She wanted me to shelve her books, not find more.
Other scholars need them, but I am not in the business of explaining my acolyte's behavior. If you did not like Gwyneth's request, you should have said so to her. Nesta bristled.
I did. She's a piece of work.
Some might say the same of you. Nesta crossed her arms.
Some might.
She'd a bet that Clotho was smiling beneath her hood. But the priestess wrote, Gwyneth, like you, has her own history of bravery and survival. I would ask that you give her the benefit of the doubt. Acid that felt an awful lot like regret burned in Nesta's veins. She shoved it aside.
Noted. And the work is fine.
Clotho only wrote, Good night, Nesta. Nesta trudged up the steps and entered the house proper. The wind seemed to moan through the halls, answered only by her grumbling stomach. The private library was mercifully empty when she strode through the double doors, instantly relaxing at the sight of all those books crammed close. The sunset on the city below, the Sidra, a living band of gold. Sitting at the desk before the wall of windows, she said to the house,
I'm sure you won't do it now, but I would like that soup.
Nothing. She sighed up at the ceiling. Fantastic. Her stomach twisted, as if it'd devour her organs if she didn't eat soon. She added tightly,
Please?
The soup appeared, a glass of water beside it, a napkin and silverware followed. A fire roared to life in the hearth, but she said quickly,
No fire. No need.
It banked to nothing, but the fairy lights in the room flared brighter. Nesta was reaching for her spoon when a plate of fresh, crusty bread appeared, as if the house were a fussing mother hen.
Thank you,
she said, into the quiet, and dug in. The fey lights flickered once, as if to say, You're welcome. Chapter 10 Nesta ate until she couldn't fit another morsel into her body, helping herself to thirds of the soup. The house seemed more than happy to oblige her, and had even offered her a slice of double chocolate cake to finish.
Is this Cassian approved?
She picked up the fork and smiled at the moist, gleaming cake.
It certainly isn't,
he said from the doorway, and Nesta whirled, scowling. He nodded toward the cake.
But eat up.
She put down the fork.
What do you want?
Cassian surveyed the family library.
Why are you eating in here?
Isn't it obvious? His grin was a slash of white.
The only thing that's obvious is that you're talking to yourself.
I'm talking to the house,
which is a considerable step up from talking to you. It doesn't talk back.
Exactly, he snorted.
I walked into that one.
He stalked across the room, eyeing the cake she still didn't touch.
Are you really talking to the house?
Don't you talk to it?
No.
It listens to me, she insisted.
Of course it does. It's enchanted.
It even brought food down to the library unasked. His brows rose.
Why?
I don't know how your fairy magic works.
Did you do anything to make it act that way?
If you're taking a page from Devlin's book and asking if I did any witchcraft, the answer is no. Cassian chuckled.
That's not what I meant. But fine. The house likes you. Congratulations.
She growled, and he leaned over her to pick up the fork. She went stiff at his closeness, but he said nothing as he took a bite of the cake. He let out a hum of pleasure that traveled along her bones, and then took another bite.
That's supposed to be mine,
she groused, peering up at him as he continued to eat.
Then take it from me, he said. A simple disarming maneuver would do, considering my center of gravity is off balance and I'm distracted by this delicious cake.
She glowered at him. He took a third bite.
These are the things, Ness, that you'd learn in lessons with me. Your threats would be a hell of a lot more impressive if you could back them up.
She drummed her fingers on the desk, eyed the fork in his hands, and pictured stabbing him in the thigh with it.
You could do that too,
he said, reading the direction of her stare.
I could teach you how to turn anything into a weapon, even a fork.
She bared her teeth, but Cassian only set down the fork with grating precision and walked out, leaving her the half-eaten cake. Nesta read the deliciously erotic romance she'd found on a shelf of the private library until her eyelids grew so heavy only iron will could hold them open. It was then that she trudged down the hall to her bedroom and collapsed into bed, not bothering to change out of her clothes before she sprawled on the mattress. She woke, freezing in the dark of night, roused herself enough to strip off the leathers, and climbed under the sheets, teeth clattering. A moment later, a fire blazed in the hearth.
No fire,
she ordered, and it vanished again. She could have sworn a tentative curiosity curled around her. Shivering, she waited for the sheets to warm to her body temperature. Long minutes passed, and then the bed heated, not from her own naked body, but some manner of spell. The very air warmed, too, as if someone had blown a great breath into the space. Her shaking stopped, and she nestled into the warmth. Thank you, she murmured. The house's only answer was to slide the still open drapes shut. By the time they'd finished swaying, she was again asleep. Elaine had been stolen by Hybern, by the cauldron, which had seen Nesta watching it and watched her in turn, had noted her scrying with bones and stones and made her regret it. She had done this, brought this upon them. Touching her power, wielding it, had done this, and she would never forgive herself. Never. Elaine would surely be tormented, ripped apart, body and soul. A crack cleaved the world. Her father stood before her, neck twisted. Her father, with his soft brown eyes, the love for her still shining in them as their light faded. Nesta jolted awake, nausea rippling through her as she grasped at the sheets. Deep in her gut, her soul, something writhed and twined around itself, seeking a way out, seeking a way into the world. Nesta shoved it down, stomped on her power, slammed every mental door she could on it. Dream, she told it. Dream and memory. Go away. Her power grumbled in her veins, but obeyed. The bed had become hot enough that Nesta kicked off the sheets before rubbing her hands over her sweat-soaked face. She needed a drink, needed anything to wash this away. She dressed swiftly, not quite feeling her body, not quite caring what time it was or where she was, thinking only of the obstacle between her and that pleasure hall. The door to the 10,000 steps was already open. The fey lights in the hall dimmed to near darkness. Her boots scuffed on the stones as she approached, glancing behind her to make sure no one followed. Hands shaking, she began the descent, around and around and around. I loved you from the first moment I held you in my arms. Down and down and down. That ancient cauldron opening an eye to stare at her, to pin her in place. The cauldron dragging her into itself, into the pit of creation, taking and taking from her, merciless despite her screaming. around and down, exactly as she had been pulled in by the cauldron, crushed beneath its terrible power. Nausea swelled, her power with it, and her foot slipped. She had only a heartbeat to grab for the wall, but too late. Her knees banged into the steps, her face hitting a second later, and then she was twisting and careening down, blasting into the wall, ricocheting off and tumbling down step after step after step. She flung out a hand blindly, nails biting into stone. Sparks exploded as she cried out and held on. The world stopped moving. Her body halted its plunge. Sprawled across the steps, hand clutching the stone, she panted great, sawing breaths that cut with each inhale. She shut her eyes, savoring the stillness, the utter lack of motion. And in the quiet, pain set in, barking, bleeding pain across every part of her body. The coppery tang of blood filled her mouth. Something wet and warm slid down her neck. A sniff told her it was blood, too. And her fingernails, the ones gripping the stone steps. Nesta blinked at her hand. She had seen sparks. Her fingers were embedded in the stone, the rock glowing as if lit with an inner flame. Gasping, she snatched back her hand, and the stone went dark. But the fingerprints remained. Four furrows buried in the top of the step, a single hole in the riser where her thumb had pressed. Icy dread sluiced through her, sent her to her battered legs, knees groaning as she sprinted upward, away from that handprint forever etched in stone.
"So, who won the fight?" Cassian asked the next morning as she sat on her rock and watched him go through his exercises. He hadn't asked at breakfast about the black eye and cut chin, or how stiffly she'd moved. Neither had Moore upon her arrival. That the bruising and cuts remained at all told Nesta how bad the fall had been. But as Hai Fei, with her improved healing, they were already on the mend. As a human, she supposed, the fall might have killed her. Perhaps this Fey body had its advantages. Being human, being weak in this world of monsters, was a death sentence. Her high Fey body was her best chance at survival. Cassian's reticence had only lasted an hour into his routine. He stood in the center of the sparring ring, panting, sweat running down his face and neck. What fight? She examined her mangled nails. Even with the whatever it was she'd flung out to catch herself, her nails had cracked. She didn't let herself name what had come from within her, didn't let herself acknowledge it. By dawn, it had been strangled into submission. "The one between you and the stairs."
Nesta cut him a glare. "I don't know what you're talking about."
Cassian began moving once more, drawing his sword and running through a series of movements that all seemed designed to hack a person in two. "You know, 3 a.m, you leave your room to get shit-faced drunk in town, and you're in such a rush to conquer the steps that you fall down a good 30 of them before you can stop yourself?"
Had he seen the step? The handprint? She demanded, "How do you know that?"
He shrugged. "Are you watching me?" Before he could answer, she spat.
"You were watching and didn't come to help?"
Cassian shrugged again. "You stopped falling. If you'd kept at it, someone would have eventually come to catch you before you hit the bottom."
She hissed at him.
He only grinned and beckoned with a hand. "Want to join me?"
"I should push you down those stairs."
Cassian sheathed his sword down his back in one elegant movement. 500 years of training. He must have drawn and sheathed that sword so many times it was muscle memory. "Well?" he demanded, an edge creeping into his voice. If you've got those glorious bruises, you might as well claim it came from training and not a pathetic tumble, he added. How many stairs did you manage this time?
66, but Nesta said, I'm not training. At the edge of the ring, males were watching them again. They'd been watching Cassian first, partially with awe and partially with what she could only assume was envy. No one moved like he did. No one even came close. But now their stares turned amused, mocking him. Once, last year, she might have gone up to those males and ripped them apart. Might have let a bit of that terrible power within her show, so they truly believed she was a witch and would curse them and 1,000 generations of their offspring if they insulted Cassian again. Nesta stretched out her legs, leaning her bruised palms on the stone. Enjoy your exercises. Cassian bristled, but he held out his hand again.
Please.
She'd never heard him say that word. It was a rope thrown between them. He'd met her halfway, let her win the power battle, admit defeat, if she would just get off the rock. She told herself to get up, to take that outstretched hand. But she couldn't bring her body to rise. His hazel eyes were bright with pleading in the morning sun, the wind dancing in his dark hair. Like he was made from these mountains, crafted from wind and stone. He was so beautiful. Not in the way that Asriel and Rhys were beautiful, but in an uncut way, savage and unrelenting. The first time she'd seen Cassian, she couldn't take her eyes off him. She felt like she'd spent her life surrounded by boys, and then a man. A male, she supposed, had suddenly appeared. Everything about him had radiated that confident, arrogant masculinity. It had been heady and overwhelming, and all she'd wanted for so many months, was to touch him, smell him, taste him, get close to that strength, and throw everything she was against it, because she knew he'd never break, never falter, never balk. But the light in his eyes dimmed as he lowered his hand. She deserved his disappointment, deserved his resentment and disgust, even if it carved something vital from her.
Tomorrow, then,
Cassian said. He didn't speak to her again for the rest of the day. Chapter 11. The private library's doors were locked. Nesta jangled the handle, but it refused to open. She said quietly, "Open this door." The house ignored her. She tried the handle again, shoving a shoulder into the door. "Open this door." Nothing. She continued slamming her shoulder into the door. Open this door right now! The house declined to obey. She gritted her teeth, panting. She'd had more books than yesterday to shelve, as the priestesses had apparently heard from Gwyn that Nesta was to be their errand girl. So they began dumping their tomes on her cart, and a few asked her to retrieve books as well. Nesta had heeded them, if only because finding the requested books took her to new places in the library and occupied her thoughts. But by the time the clock had struck 6, she was exhausted and dusty and hungry. She'd ignored the sandwich the house had laid out for her in the afternoon, and this had apparently pissed off the house enough that it now refused to allow her entry into the private library. All I want, Nesta ground out, is a nice hot meal and a good book. She tried the handle again. Please. Nothing. Nothing at all. Fine. She stormed down the hall. Hunger alone carried her up to the dining room, where she found Cassian mid-meal, Asriel across from him. The shadow singer's face was solemn, his eyes wary. Cassian, his back to her, only stiffened, no doubt alerted either by her scent or the cadence of her steps. She didn't speak as she aimed for a chair halfway down the table. A place setting and a spread of food appeared as she reached her seat. She had a feeling that if she took the plate and left, it'd vanish from her hands before she reached the door. Nesta maintained her silence as she slid into her chair, picked up her fork, and dug into the fillet of beef and roasted asparagus. Cassian cleared his throat and said to Azriel,
"How long will you be gone?"
"I'm not sure." The shadow singer's eyes bore into her before he added,
"Vasa was right to suspect something deadly amiss. Things are dangerous enough over there that it would be wiser for me to keep my base here at the house and winnow back and forth."
Curiosity bit deep, but Nesta said nothing. Vasa. She hadn't seen the enchanted human queen since the war had ended. Since the young woman had tried to speak to her about how wonderful Nesta's father had been, how he'd been a true father to her, helped her and won her this temporary freedom, and on until Nesta's bones were screaming to get away, her blood boiling to think that her father had found his courage for someone other than her and her sisters, that he'd been the father she had needed, but for someone else. He had let their mother die in his refusal to send his merchant fleet hunting for a cure for her, had fallen into poverty and let them starve, but had decided to fight for this stranger? This nobody queen peddling a sad tale of betrayal and loss? That thing deep in Nesta stirred, but she ignored it, pushed it down as best she could without the distraction of music or sex or wine. She took a sip of her water, letting it cool her throat, her belly, and supposed that would have to be enough.
"What did Rhys say about it?"
Cassian asked, around a mouthful of food.
"Who do you think insisted I not risk a base over there?"
"Protective bastard."
A note of affection rang in Cassian's words, though. Silence fell again. Azriel nodded at her.
"What happened to you?"
She knew what he meant. The black eye was finally fading. Her hands and chin had healed, along with the bruising on her body. But the black eye had turned greenish. By tomorrow morning, it'd be gone entirely.
"Nothing," she said without looking at Cassian.
"She fell down the stairs,"
Cassian said, not looking at her either. Azriel's silence was pointed before he asked,
"Did someone push you?"
"Asshole,"
Cassian growled. Nesta lifted her eyes from her plate enough to note the amusement in Azriel's gaze, even though no smile graced his sensuous mouth. Cassian went on.
"I told her earlier today if she'd bothered to train, she'd at least have bragging rights for the bruises."
Azriel took a calm sip of his water.
"Why aren't you training, Nesta?"
"I don't want to."
"Why not?"
Cassian muttered.
"Don't waste your breath, Az."
She glared at him. "I'm not training in that miserable village." Cassian glared right back.
"You've been given an order. You know the consequences. If you don't get off that fucking rock by the end of this week, what happens next is out of my hands."
"So you'll tattle to your precious High Lord?" she crooned. "Big tough warrior needs oh-so-powerful Rhysand to fight his battles."
"Don't you fucking talk about Rhys with that tone,"
Cassian snarled. "Rhys is an asshole," Nesta snapped. "He's an arrogant, preening asshole." Azriel sat back in his seat, eyes simmering with anger, but said nothing.
"That's bullshit,"
Cassian spat, the siphons on the backs of his hands burning like ruby flames.
"You know that is bullshit, Nesta."
"I hate him," she seethed.
"Good. He hates you, too," Cassian shot back. "Everyone fucking hates you. Is that what you want? Because congratulations, it's happened."
Asriel let out a long, long breath. Cassian's words pelted her, one after another, hit her somewhere low and soft, and hit hard. Her fingers curled into claws, scraping along the table as she flung back at him. "And I suppose now you'll tell me that you are the only person who doesn't hate me, and I'm supposed to feel something like gratitude and agree to train with you? Now I tell you I'm done." The words rumbled between them. Nesta blinked, the only sign of surprise she'd allow. Asriel tensed, as if surprised as well. But she sliced into Cassian before he could go on. "Does that mean you're done panting after me as well? Because what a relief that will be, to know you've finally taken the hint." Cassian's muscled chest heaved, his throat working. "You want to rip yourself apart? Go right ahead. Implode all you like." He stood, meal half finished. "The training was supposed to help you, not punish you. I don't know why you don't fucking get that."
"I told you, I'm not training in that miserable village."
"Fine." Cassian stalked out, his pounding steps fading down the hall. Alone with Asriel, Nesta bared her teeth at him. Asriel watched her with that cool quiet, keeping utterly still, like he saw everything in her head, her bruised heart. She couldn't bear it. So she stood, only two bites taken from her food, and left the room as well. She returned to the library. The lights blazed as brightly as they had during the day, and a few lingering priestesses wandered the levels. She found her cart, filled again with books needing to be shelved. No one spoke to her, and she spoke to no one as she began to work, with only the roaring silence in her head for company. Amran had been wrong. Keep reaching out your hand was utter bullshit when the person it was extended to could bite hard enough to rip off fingers. Cassian sat on the flat top of the mountain in which the House of Wind had been built, peering down into the open-air training ring beneath him. The stars glinted overhead, and a brisk autumn breeze that whispered of changing leaves and crisp nights flowed past him. Below, Valaris was a golden sparkle, accented along the Sidra with a rainbow of color. He had never failed at anything. Not like this. And he had been so stupidly desperate, so stupidly hopeful, that he hadn't believed she'd truly refuse. Until today, when he'd seen her on that rock and known she'd wanted to get up, but watched her shut down the instinct, watched her clamp that steel will over herself. "You're not the brooding type." Cassian started, whipping his head to find Feyre sitting beside him. She dangled her feet into the emptiness, her golden brown hair ruffled by the wind as she peered into the training pit. "Did you fly in?"
"Winnowed. Rhys said you were thinking loudly."
Feyre's mouth quirked to the side.
"I figured I'd see what was happening."
A fine skin of power remained wrapped around his high lady, invisible to the naked eye, but glittering with strength. Cassian nodded toward her. "Why's Rhysi still got that ironclad shield on you?"
"It was mighty enough to guard all of Valaris." "Because he's a pain in the ass," Feyre said, but smiled softly. "He's still learning how it works, and I still haven't figured out how to break free of it. But with the Queen's a renewed threat, and Baron in the mix, especially if Kosche is their puppet master, Rhys is perfectly happy to leave it on."
"Everything with those Queens is a fucking headache," Cassian grumbled. "Hopefully Az will figure out what they're really up to, or at least what Briallen and Kosche are up to."
Rhys was still contemplating what to do about Eris's demands.
Cassian supposed he'd get his orders on that front soon, and would then have to deal with the asshole, general to general.
"Part of me dreads what Asriel will find," Feyre said, leaning back on her hands.
Moore is heading off to Valahan again tomorrow. I worry about that, too. That she'll come back with worse news about their intentions.
We'll deal with it.
Spoken like a true general. Cassian knocked Feyre's shoulder with his wing, a casual, affectionate gesture, one he never dared make with the females of any Illyrian community. Illyrians were psychotic on a good day about who touched their wings and how, and wing-touching outside of the bedroom, training, or mortal combat was an enormous taboo. But Rhys never cared, and Cassian needed the contact. Always needed physical contact, he'd learned, probably thanks to a childhood spent with precious little of it. Feyre seemed to understand his need for a reassuring touch, because she said, "How bad is it?"
"Bad."
It was all he could bring himself to admit. "But she's going to the library?"
"She went back to the library tonight. She's still down there for all I know."
Feyre gave a hmm of contemplation, gazing at the city. His high lady looked so young. He always forgot how young she truly was, considering what she'd already faced and achieved in her life. At 21, he'd still been drinking and brawling and fucking, unconcerned with anything and anybody except his ambition to be the most skilled of Illyrian warriors since Aenelius himself. At 21, Feyre had saved their world, mated, and found true happiness. Feyre asked, "Did Nesta say why she won't train?"
"Because she hates me,"
Feyre snorted. "Cassian, Nesta does not hate you. Believe me."
"She sure as shit acts like it."
Feyre shook her head. "No, she doesn't." Her words were pained enough that he frowned.
"She doesn't hate you either,"
he said quietly. Feyre shrugged. The gesture made his chest ache. "For a while, I thought she didn't, but now I don't know."
"I don't understand why you two can't just—"
he struggled for the right word. "Get along, be civil, smile at each other." Feyre's laugh was hollow. "It's always been that way."
"Why?"
"I have no idea. I mean, it was always that way with us and our mother. She only had an interest in Nesta. She ignored me and saw Elaine as barely more than a doll to dress up. But Nesta was hers. Our mother made sure we knew it. Or she just cared so little what we thought or did that she didn't bother to hide it from us." Resentment and long-held pain laced every word. That a mother would do such a thing to her children. "But when we fell into poverty, when I started hunting, it got worse. Our mother was gone, and our father wasn't exactly present. He wasn't fully there. So it was me and Nesta, always at each other's throats." Feyre rubbed her face. "I'm too exhausted to go over every detail. It's all just a tangled mess." Cassian refrained from observing that both sisters seemed to need each other, that Nesta perhaps needed Feyre more than she realized, and from mentioning that this mess between the two females hurt him more than he could express. Feyre sighed. "That's my long way of saying that if Nesta hated you, I know what it looks like, and she doesn't hate you."
"She might after what I said to her tonight."
"Asriel filled me in." Feyre rubbed her face again. "I don't know what to do, how to help her."
3 days in and I'm already at my wit's end," he said.
They sat in silence, the wind drifting past them. Mist gathered on the Sidra far below, and white plumes of smoke from countless chimneys rose to meet it. Feyre asked, "So what do we do?" He didn't know.
Maybe the library work will be enough to pull her out of this.
But even as he spoke the words, they rang false. Feyre apparently agreed.
No. In the library, she can hide in the silence and amongst the shelves. The library was meant to balance what the training does.
He rolled his shoulders.
Well, she said she's not training in that miserable village, so we're at an impasse.
Feyre sighed again.
Seems like it.
But Cassian paused, blinked once, and peered down at the training ring before him.
What?
He snorted, shaking his head.
I should have known.
A tentative smile bloomed on Feyre's mouth, and Cassian leaned in to kiss her cheek. He only got within an inch of her face before his lips met night-kissed steel.
Right, the shield. That level of protection is insane.
She smoothed her thick cream sweater.
So is Rhys.
Cassian sniffed, trying and failing to detect her scent.
He's got your scent shielded too?
Feyre grinned.
It's all part of the same shield. Helion wasn't joking about it being impenetrable.
And despite everything, Cassian grinned back. Memory washed over him from when he'd met her in the dining room several levels below. This girl, who would become his high lady. She'd been so horribly thin then, so dead-eyed and withdrawn, that it had taken all his self-control not to fly to the spring court and rip Tamlin limb from limb. Cassian shook the thought away, focusing instead on the revelation before him.
One last time. He'd try one last time.
Chapter 12. Nesta stood in the training ring atop the House of Wind and scowled.
I thought we were going up to Windhaven.
Cassian strode over to the rope ladder laid out on the ground and straightened a rung.
Change of plans.
No trace of that red-hot anger had remained on his face this morning when she'd walked into the breakfast room. Asriel was already gone, and Cassian hadn't said a word about why he'd left. Something about the queens, presumably, judging by what she'd heard the previous night. When she'd finished her porridge, she'd looked for any sign of Morrigan, but the female had never appeared, and Cassian had led her here, not speaking on the walk up.
Everyone hates you.
The words had lingered, like a bell that wouldn't stop ringing. He finally clarified.
Moore's gone back to Valahan, and Rhys and Feyre are busy, so there's no one to winnow us to Windhaven. We'll be training here today.
He gestured to the empty ring.
Free of any watching eyes,
he added with a sharp grin that made her swallow.
Just you and me, Ness.
Nesta had said last night she wasn't training at the village. She'd said it multiple times, Cassian had realized. She wasn't training at that miserable village.
He should have realized it days ago.
He knew her better than that, after all. Nesta might be willing to face down the King of Hybern himself, but she was proud as hell, appearing foolish, making herself vulnerable. She'd rather die, would rather sit on a freezing rock in the icy wind for hours than look like a fool in front of anyone, especially arrogant warriors predisposed to mock any female who attempted to fight like them. It didn't matter to him where she trained, so long as she began the training. If she refused today, he didn't know what he'd do. The morning sun beat down, promising a warm day, and Cassian removed his leather jacket before rolling up a shirt sleeve.
Well?
He asked, lifting his eyes to her face. The hesitation made his chest tighten unbearably. But he stomped on that hope, slowly folding his other sleeve. He wondered if she noticed his fingers trembling slightly. Pretend everything is normal. Don't scare her off. There was nowhere for her to plant that beautiful ass here.
He'd already moved the lounge chairs that Amron and sometimes Moore liked to use for sunbathing while he and the others trained. When Nesta remained by the doorway, Cassian found himself saying, "I'll make a bargain with you."
Her eyes flashed. Fey bargains were no idle thing. He knew Feyre had already versed Nesta in them when her sister had first come here, as a precaution. From Nesta's wary gaze, he knew she remembered Feyre's warnings well. Fey bargains were bound by magic and marked in ink upon one's body. The ink would not fade until the bargain had been fulfilled. And if the bargain was broken, the magic could exact terrible vengeance. Cassian maintained a casual stance.
"If you do an hour of exercises right now, I'll owe you a favor."
"I don't need any favors from you."
"Then name your price."
He struggled to calm his racing heart.
"An hour of training for whatever you want."
"That's a fool's bargain for you." Her eyes narrowed. "I thought you were a general. Aren't you supposed to be good at negotiating?" His mouth quirked upward. She wasn't fighting him.
"For you, I have no strategies."
She studied him with unflinching focus. "Anything I want?"
"Anything,"
he added wryly.
"Anything short of you ordering me to fall out of the sky and smash my head on the earth."
She didn't smile the way he'd hoped. Her eyes turned to chips of ice. "You truly believe me capable of such a thing?"
"No,"
he said without hesitation. Her mouth tightened, like she didn't believe him, and those were purple smudges under her eyes. How long had she worked in the library last night? Demanding to know why she'd stayed up so late wouldn't be wise. He'd save that battle for another time. In an hour, perhaps. She surveyed him again, and Cassian willed himself to stand still, to appear open and non-threatening, and not like his very heart was in his bloody, outstretched hands. She said at last, "Fine. Let's just say it will be a favor, of whatever size I wish." It was dangerous to allow this. Deadly. Stupid. But he said, "Yes." He extended his hand one last time. "Keep reaching out your hand."
"A bargain."
He met her steely expression with his own. "You train with me for an hour, and I'll owe you one favor of whatever size you wish." "Agreed." She slid her hand into his and shook firmly.
Magic zapped between them, and she gasped, recoiling. Cassian let it thunder into him like a stampede of galloping horses. He rode it out. Whatever her power was, it had made the bargain more intense, demanding.
He scanned his hands, his bare forearms, seeking any hint of a tattoo beyond the Illyrian ones he bore for luck and glory. Nothing.
It had to be somewhere. He peeled off his shirt and scanned the muscled planes of his torso. Nothing.
He approached the narrow mirror leaned against one end of the ring, left there for them to study their technique while exercising alone. Stopping before it, Cassian twisted, staring over a shoulder at his tattooed back. There, dead in the center of the Illyrian tattoo snaking down his spine, a new tattoo had appeared. An eight-pointed star whose compass points radiated in sharp lines across and up the groove of his back, twining with the Illyrian markings long inked there. The eastern and western points of the star shot right onto his wings, black, blending into black. A matching one, he knew, would be on Nesta's spine. He tried not to think about her bare expanse of skin, now marked in black ink, as he faced her. Nesta's eyes weren't on the mirror, though. No. They'd fixed on his torso, on his chest, on his abdominal muscles, on his bare arms. Her pulse fluttered in her throat.
He didn't dare move, not as her gaze fixed on the V of muscles that sloped beneath the waist of his pants, not as her eyes darkened, her lashes bobbing as color crept over her pale skin. His blood heated, skin tightening over bone and muscle, as if it could feel the touch of her blue-gray eyes, as if it were her fingers running over his stomach, lower. He knew better than to throw out a teasing remark, rile her, and she'd not only refuse to train, bargain or no, but she'd stop looking at him like that. Slowly, her eyes trailed up his body, lingering on his carved pectorals and the Illyrian tattoo that swirled over one of them before flowing down his left arm. He might have flexed, slightly. His voice thick, he managed to say, "Ready?" Cauldron boil him. He knew the question held more meanings than he cared to unravel. From the glimmer in her eyes, he knew she got it. But she squared her shoulders. "All right. I owe you 1 hour of training."
"You sure as hell do."
Cassian mastered his breathing, shoving aside that roaring